You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene
Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show.
Mad Men.
Bing is for doing that. I love how the Tulich in there.
Yeah.
That's nice. We dominate that Mad Men intro.
I know, yeah.
I'm glad that you joined in. Yes. We need a mezzo soprano.
A little mezzo. Bing is for doing. We are doing the Mad Men after show, after Buzz after show. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Catherine Tulich.
Hello.
And by the lovely Matthew Lieberman.
I am lovely. Aren't I?
We're all lovely.
Yes.
We are sans Joe Sanfilippo. Sans Flippo, if you will, today. He is on a... What is he doing? Oh, he's at a giant competition of some sort I can't talk about.
Oh, wow.
Competition?
Uh-huh. Secret, super secret giant competition.
Yes,
really?
He is all weekend. Well, he was going to call in, but he couldn't do it. Didn't
but
work
like
out.
A racing thing or something?
You know,
you
can't really talk about Joseph. We'll find out what it is later.
He's so secret. Underground, he's in China. You know what I mean?
He's very... Got a lot going on there, Joe San Flippo. But we're also here with Marissa Serafini, who's here.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hey,
hi.
Happy Memorial Day weekend to all of you out there.
Yeah. Happy barbecuing.
Yeah.
And all that. Yeah.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop us from giving you some Mad Men.
Yes, talking the better half.
The better half. So, you know, yeah. Mad Men's, we've hit our stride here, I think so. I think people talked about the slow start to the season and... You know, what the season is or what it isn't. And I don't know, these episodes, these last four, right?
Have been really, really, really solid. And this one wasn't as, like, loud and splashy.
Crazy, like last week.
Like last week or even the 2 weeks before. Like, everything since the merger was kind of nuts, finding out how everything's going to fit together. But this was, you know, getting back in touch with our characters and advancing pretty much everyone's story.
Right.
In some way.
And I think that, like, yeah, it's weird because I thought this would be a little bit of a hangover, not like the movie Hangover, but you know, I had like a last
like
episode,
a holding episode.
Well, sure, you know,
it was a little bit, but it was kind of still a lot. I think a lot happened. You
yeah,
know? And there's still sort of an undercurrent of danger, like with all the things that were going on with police and sirens. And there's this real sort of dark underbelly tonight, even though there was a lot of stuff going on with the characters.
Yeah, there were sirens in almost every scene that took place in the city.
Right.
Yes, I know this. Well, I mean, I know that we're getting towards the 70s. I mean, New York was an extremely dangerous place in that decade, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 70s is very, very, very urban decay set in, very much so around the country, but no place hit harder than New York City, where, you know, Times Square was, you know, basically a pit, a cesspool.
Because I remember growing up in Australia, it's like, oh my God, you'd never go to New York.
Oh, yeah.
It's too dangerous.
No,
you get stabbed, you get mugged.
Sure.
Don't go there.
I mean, Central Park and Times Square were no place to be. And now, of course, it's all Disney and Broadway.
Yeah,
it's all fun.
I know.
But back in the late 60s, early 70s, all through the 70s entirely, look at Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, triple X, you know, X-rated places and X-rated places. So, what do you call those places, Matt?
Porn,
yes.
Theaters,
red light. I don't know, whatever.
Their brain.
Strip
clubs.
They have X-rated.
I think they still
places.
Have them. But
escort homes.
I don't think they've disappeared.
Not so much in Times Square.
But no, they're still there.
But yeah. Such a parallel to these fairly affluent white lives,
sure,
really, isn't it? To be honest, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, so a lot of that. We'll get into all that stuff too.
We got a retreat out to the country.
Yeah.
With Don and.
There was mosquitoes and everything.
Mosquitoes and everything, sure. Yeah. We did not get to go to the beach, but we got some killer beach wear.
Yeah, I wanted to see Joan at the beach.
I know. We know that Planet of the Apes is still in theaters.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because we know these episodes are about, like, they said a lot, they've said repeatedly these episodes are about a month. Chronologically, there's about a month between each episode. You can figure it through the season. So this is why we didn't have the direct hangover from. I really love that. That method. It's not really talked about that much, but that method of storytelling, the way Mad Men does that, it's like a month, a month, a month. So there's no real, you know, there's no real cliffhangers. There's no real carryover.
It's not very serialized.
Not very serialized in that sense. So there's no, like, cliffhanger from one episode where, you know, what's going to happen to Don? Tune in next week. It's like, this happened. It's its own episode. It airs as it, you know, it completes, it's a complete piece of work, and then you go to next month. And although it's still a long story that takes you through the year, it's really interesting what it does. So anyway, the hangover I was expecting from the crash episode, like people waking up like, ugh, what the hell happened last night? Of course, we don't get that because we're in a month later.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway.
But there's still, I guess, competition and chaos reigns within this merged.
Yeah.
And what did Pete say? Everyone says this is a mess. This place, it's a mess. From the outside, people
and
are saying
still
this
no
is a mess.
Name.
Well, yes. I think it's interesting. Just even like people say it all the time, even the name, the super long,
it's
sort
like
of like eight-letter acronym. Yes.
Sterling Cooper, Draper, Price, Cutler, Gleason, and Shaw.
Yes. Yeah. What about the acronym?
Very good.
SEDP. CGC?
Yeah.
All right. Like, that's confusing into itself.
And two of them are dead.
Two of them are dead.
Bert Cooper's well into his 70s.
Right. Yeah. So we had a lot, you know, we touched on Peg and, on Peggy and Abe a lot. We touched on Peggy and Chaw. We touched on Don and Betty, which we'll definitely get into. A little bit about Roger, a little bit about Pete.
Yeah.
And a little bit about our boy Bob Benson,
of course.
We'll get into later with Benson Watch.
And the triumphant return of Duck.
Of Duck Phillips, who we have not seen since season 4, The Suitcase, which is episode 7 or 8.
Sure. One of my favorite, one of everyone's favorite episodes.
Yeah. I feel like I'm one of the best episodes.
I'm not like, you know, the best, my favorite episode, The Suitcase, duh. But like, second favorite, maybe The Crash, actually, last week.
Really?
I really love that episode.
All right.
The Crash was awesome.
I'm eager to see if that still remains, like, in your top 5 when the series ends.
Oh, you think that they made top... Are you saying The Crash was not that good?
I'm saying The Crash, upon seeing it for the first time and being kind of blown away by the fact that they were doing such a wild episode, upon more viewings... I think there are episodes that have more emotional punch that are more worthwhile. Okay. For me.
I think The Crash is memorable for many reasons, but maybe not be the most. I think
get some shit on me all day
want. No. I think in the lexicon of Mad Men, I think the whole seasons, I think people will remember The Crash.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, as one of those shows that were like, wow.
It's my second favorite episode. Yeah.
Okay, Joe. Yeah. We're not trying to hurt you, Joe. It's a safe place. A safe place, Joe. We love you here.
I'm back. I'm not leaving.
Okay, good.
Okay, so let's get into this episode because I really want to talk about, you know, all the happenings in this episode and sort of unpack all of this. But before we do, we want to tell you, you know, listen, we have an announcement for you, After Buzzers. We need you. After Buzzers everywhere, we need you. We don't really ask you directly for much. We ask that you tune into us, you download us, you rate us. Other podcasts may ask for some shekels or some money or some other things like that. We don't really ask for anything. We just want to give you quality entertainment and quality
programming.
But there is a way that you can help us and help us because, you know, we're building some new studios. We've got some we're coming to you in live in HD. We're streaming live. We're doing all this great stuff. It costs money. It's coming out of our pockets, mostly Maria's pocket, but that's okay. what can help us is Adventures and Serial Buddies. Adventures of Serial Buddies, the hilarious, funny, super funny Serial Buddy comedy produced by the AfterBuzz founders Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro is now available on demand. We talked about it being available in theaters. We all saw it, and it was great. It's now on demand. It stars, Kevin and Maria's in it, and it also has Beth Bears and Artie Lang and Kathleen Gifford and Christopher Lloyd and the voice of Henry Winkler. So it's on demand. So if you could go on and download it and order it. Order it a lot, watch it a few times. That would help us hear a lot. I mean, we saw the show. I mean, I saw the movie. I thought it was really funny. I know it sounds like I'm a shill for AfterBuzz, but the movie was very funny. Kathy Lee, all these folks were fantastic in it. I know you saw it and reviewed it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's pretty. It's a I compared it to sort of Australian films like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, sure, and Muriel's Wedding, kind of crazy.
I can totally see that comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure,
it's a super funny movie. Mm. We're not shills. We're trying to share a good movie with you guys. We wouldn't recommend it if we didn't like it ourselves.
Right. Yeah. So check it out for yourself. Don't take our word for it. Check it out yourselves. And it was in theaters. It was in, you know, 8 to 10 cities, I think it was. If you didn't have a chance to check it out, you can now download it. Or not download it. You can now buy it on demand. And when you do that, you're helping us out here at AfterBuzz. And you're helping us out here continue to give this wonderful programming, because all that goes right back to us. So
it is available May 29th.
May 29th. You can go to SerialBuddies.com. You can find it on iTunes and all the other digital stores. It really means a lot to us, the AfterBuzz community here. And keep listening. And you can follow us at AfterBuzz. You can also follow at Maria Menounos, or at AfterBuzz, or at SerialBuddies_Serial_Buddies. Thank you. At @Serial_Buddies on Twitter. And check it out and buy AfterBuzz. Buy Serial Buddies online now.
All right.
Blech.
Great.
That happened.
Joe, right. I feel like you just came down from an energy serum. Yeah.
I really am. I'm excited about the thing, but I can't get it all out. All right. Here we go. So back to Mad Men. Here we are. So let's get into the thing that jumped out at me the most was Betty. You know,
Betty
the whole
is back.
Betty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Betty's back.
And she got her swagger back.
Yeah, so, wow.
Matt, what do you give me? Give me your Betty takes. What do you got?
All right. Well, it's another name for this episode, The Better Half, which could refer to Betty, also could be how Betty Francis got her groove back.
Sure.
She has lost the weight. She is now the wife of an up-and-coming political candidate. And men are coming up to her. All eyes are on her, trying to seduce her. And she can't get enough of it.
She loves it.
Her self-esteem took a serious hit when she gained her weight.
Yeah.
And I want to sort of stress the fact that we shouldn't just be concentrating on her weight. But yes, it was, for her, a self-esteem issue.
Exactly. Certainly.
Yeah, because, we don't want to put out there that you've got to be thin to be hot. So.
No, certainly not.
But I think in this case, Betty is the fact that, it was so tied to herself, her own self-esteem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in her own mind, you look back at the early seasons, her being, she was a former model, pretty housewife. Mm. It was very much tied into how she viewed herself, and having men lust after her was one of the only pleasures she got.
Mm. Well, it's how she identified herself. I mean, this was her identity.
Yeah. Exactly.
Her appearance was so much about her.
And it was taken away.
Yeah.
It was stripped. So when she got it back, she's very much enjoying it. And also, she's kind of trying to make sure that she is in fact back. When she allows Don to seduce her at the camp, and that's very much what it was. She let him seduce her. She took him, basically.
Yeah.
She sensed what was going on and she let it happen, because she wanted to know that she still had it, and she wanted to know that even though Don was married, that he was going to take her because she's that beautiful and that she, is still worthwhile. She wanted to see the look on his face again.
And she sort of did to Megan what other women had done to her, right?
You know? I bet it felt good.
Yeah.
In a perverse way.
Sure. Well, there's a lot. I mean, and then the whole scene with her and Henry at the dinner was telling, and the guy, who was that guy? Actually?
Stu. His name was Stu. Yeah. He had been raising funds at the same event.
A campaign contributor.
Yeah.
One of those guys. So Stu. So that, I love that scene. I love how that was played. In that, it's what we've seen before, which are these sort of lecherous guys hitting on Betty in some way. We've seen this before in the Mad Men world and the way she handled it. Yeah. But she says,
"Can you believe that I've had three kids?"
That was awesome. I have three kids.
And he's like, "I don't care." And she's like, "No. Do you believe? Can you believe that I've had three kids?"
That was the ultimate, ooh, like, what? shit, like mm-hmm. Betty. So she's definitely taking control of the situation. It very much reminded me of that. I don't know what it was. It feels like season three or season four, where she had that moment where she stepped out and had that sort of dangerous sort of liaison with the, I guess, the auto.
This is how she got Henry, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
That's
how she
right.
got Henry.
Yeah. How she got Henry.
This is what she does. She's very
this
good
is what
at
she
this.
Does. Yes.
But the other flip, the other twist in that was obviously what you touched on is that, you know, Henry called her out on it, you know.
But he was turned on by it.
Yeah,
that was kind of.
He was turned on by it because, you know, he gets to take her home.
Yeah, that's
the other
right.
men
it's
get
like the
to
trophy
look.
Wife, right?
Yeah,
it's like having the wife that everyone lusts after.
Yeah, that whole scene, the way that was very surprising,
which again,
the way that
is her identity, right?
Yeah, that was very surprising the way that scene played out to me, and I actually enjoyed that. That was well written and well acted and everything else because it was a twist. It was a twist where, like, you think Betty's getting hit on by this lecherous guy, she sort of turns it on him, like she wants the attention and maybe even wants to go home with him.
Yeah,
then she tells it, then. You know, Henry makes her tell him, tell me. And then she tells him. And then you think, like, oh, my God, it's going to be bad. He loves it.
He just goes right in there.
That's great. It sort of sums up Betty's power.
Yeah.
It sort of sums up Betty has got her groove back. This is what Betty does best.
Oh, yeah. And, like, I loved the scene at the gas station. Don pulls up at the gas station.
Yep.
And he gets out of the car, and this young guy is just staring at this behind. And it happens to be his ex-wife's.
Yeah. Yes.
And at first, I wasn't sure. I was like, is this a flashback?
Yeah.
For some reason?
I thought it was a flashback, too.
Because, you know, Don was so agreeable, and, like, you know, Betty, she looks so youthful. And, you know, Don didn't even pay the gas station boy any mind. He was like, he's like, oh, she's lost. He's like, fill it up with regular.
Yeah.
Where are you headed? Pow.
Yeah. I enjoyed that too. I enjoyed that view. Oh, I'm not gonna lie.
And I loved more than anything, and this is like getting into Dawn a little bit, but the beat where Bobby is teaching them the song and Dawn actually joins in with the song.
Father Abraham.
Which you seem to
know.
Oh,
here we go.
This is
the gas station scene right there.
Father Abraham has many sons have Father Abraham.
Is that like a camp song?
With his right hand.
Yes. Listen, so going back, Don, that was a very cool moment. It sort of reinforced that Betty is back, that Don is like, oh, you know, and it talks about, you know, Joe is here, Joe's like, hi, Betty's back, Joe Flippo, hi, Betty's back.
Oh, well, whatever, no,
yeah,
confident
no,
Betty's
exactly.
back.
Yes.
Because, and this was a great, this was also one of, I feel like I'm using a lot of hyperbole this episode, but, this podcast, but I think this is one of January Jones's best episodes. What are her finest performances?
I'd honestly say, I prefer this episode to The Crash. I like this episode very, very much. It's a quieter episode, but we got some really fantastic moments. The moment between Betty and Don after they had sex and they're talking about...
his conversation. That amazing conversation about Don sort of saying, why is sex the measure of sort of intimacy and closeness?
Well, I want to get to that detail as well, but I think this is January Jones' best episode. There's been a lot of complaints about sort of like, you know, where's Betty and, you know, is Betty relevant anymore? And she's way out in the suburbs, and this is a really great way to sort of insert her back into the fold. But not only insert her back, but she plays a key role. It's something that the question's been asked, do we still want to see Betty? Do we care about Betty? Do we care about her and Henry out in the suburbs and what the hell's going on? And frankly, you know, Betty in this power position, you know, doing what she did to Henry and the guys and the Don, like, I want to see that Betty. I could see five more episodes of that Betty.
Yeah.
So it was really, really great. And then also, in the context of what's been going on with Don, the sort of collapse of Don, here's Betty with some very specific insight into Don.
Yeah.
That pillow talk was all about, oh, Don.
Like,
you know.
is it like this with Megan, that poor girl? That poor girl, she still thinks that loving you is the way...
to get close to you.
Yeah.
Right, like, that's the worst way. It's
which,
the,
like...
amazing line.
But which begs the question, what is the best way to get close to Don Draper?
Yeah,
care about him.
Well, I don't think that I don't think he knows. This is the whole thing. I don't think there is a way to get too close to Don Draper because he's not in touch.
Because he's fictional.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But how do you get close to Dick Whitman?
Well, I don't know. That's a whole
But he just he sort of, but he admitted tonight that sort of sexual intimacy is not intimate for him. So what is intimate for him? You know, yeah. he seeks the bed of women, but it's not an intimate act at all for
all
him.
All these questions you guys are asking, I don't think are meant
to be
answered.
Do you know what I think is intimate to him? It is working with him. It's you know, it's why he was so upset when Megan left the agency. It's why when Peggy left the agency was so dramatic and like emotional for him. You know, that moment where he has her hand, he kisses her hand in the fifth season.
Right.
I think that impressing him and being his equal is the only way to really get close to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's, well, I mean, I still argue that you're not getting close to him. That's a way to maybe endear yourself to him. Like, oh, you know, but you're never getting close to him.
That's true.
Like, that's, you know, like, that's like, okay, there's, I respect you and I don't give a shit about you. Mm. Right. So if you do those things, if you respect your work or in that nation, then you're like, okay, well, okay, you're okay. I respect you.
At least he gets your respect.
But you're not getting, no one's getting close to Don Draper. No one's getting inside Don unless you're sleeping with him in the bed in that moment.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, you know, Betty said, unless it's that moment, that's it. That's all you're going to get.
But he said, you know, I would have felt just as intimate. What did he say?
If I was holding you in my arms.
Right.
And she kind of threw that back in his
face. I love that.
Yeah. When she was like, "Are sure you don't want to hold
just hold me?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of great. The dialogue was really, really, really snappy and great.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the dialogue was really snappy and great in that whole seduction sequence, if you will. Because obviously we saw her see her at the gas station. And then we saw them have that chat where we know the nice chat with Bobby. Then afterward, she's like, did you find a bottle?
Yeah.
And it's like, the mosquitoes will eat me up. Not in those shorts.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. And then she's like, I'm going to bed. And then she leaves the door open. We're like, I'm like, don't leave that door open. She leaves it open. We're like, oh!
Of course she's going to
leave
the door open.
Close the door. The mosquitoes will get in.
And then we're like, oh!
Yeah.
But I want to talk about that line again.
Sure.
Are you sure you don't want to just hold me in your arms? There's something about being married to someone and seeing all them warts and all, you know, and divorcing them because they keep cheating on you, they keep letting you down. Mm. She knows Don for who he really is.
Right.
And she knows when he's saying something that's complete bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and like, that's the thing. When Don is with women, he doesn't know how to turn it off. Even when it is, you know, someone that he was married to, he said, you know, he told both Megan and Betty, I missed you. And I can't say for sure that he meant it either time.
Yeah.
He just knows what to say. He's an ad man. And he knows how romantic it is to say,
what he thinks you want to hear.
Yeah. How romantic it is to say, I could just hold you in my arms and I would be happy. And she's like, BS.
Yeah.
You'll never be happy with anything.
I 90% agree with everything you said, except for the fact I really do think that when he said he missed Betty, I think he did. I think he missed her.
Betty.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, that the Betty in bed, maybe, but like.
Oh, no, the confident Betty.
Yeah.
The one that was.
Oh,
the
not
top
the.
Of
yeah,
things.
Exactly.
Because what he inevitably does, which is what he's done with Megan, is he just chips away at these women's self esteem and their character and everything till they get to the point where they're so weak and so kind of like, you know, powerless. And then he doesn't want them anymore. I mean, he did that to Betty. He's done that to Megan. I mean, he marries his women because they are confident.
Right.
But he just totally chips away at that. And their relationship destroys them. And that's now Betty's back to what he was attracted to in the beginning.
Sure. Which is a great point because this is also as much about Betty, back to Betty getting her groove back.
Yeah.
What this proves is if Betty is Betty, if Betty's at the top of her game firing on all cylinders, like, she's unstoppable. She's got, you know, Draper wants her. Francis wants her. The contributors want her. Like, when she's Betty, she's you know, unstoppable. So that was great to see. And January Jones did a great job of playing that Betty.
Yeah.
But, so we'll see. Like, I really want to see more of this Betty. I want to see more of her. And we'll see how that progresses. But, so we're going to talk about Peggy and Abe and Peggy and Cha and Peggy and Don and Peggy. But before we do that, I do want to thank you all for listening to us and tuning into us on iTunes. We appreciate all the downloads, all the comments, all the commentary. Please continue to comment. Please continue to rate us on iTunes. Please continue to listen and download to us. We are we read everything, and we appreciate all that happens via iTunes as well as YouTube as well as through AfterBuzz as well. So continue. So Peggy.
Yeah. Wow, it was a lot of Peggy tonight, and she's in a bit of a crisis, I think.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, so we opened with this interesting sort of Peggy being the diplomat in the middle.
Torn, I think, more than being a diplomat.
Between the former mentor the current mentor slash potential lover.
Right. So let me ask you this, because she very much did not want any parts of this. She didn't want to get in the middle. She didn't want an opinion. She didn't want anything else. But the question is, you know, a month ago during the crash and before that, she was pretty much disgusted with Don. She's been competing with Don. Mm. She clearly has an affinity for Ted Chau, and she likes...
Well, more of a respect for him.
Right, more of a respect for him. So I'm not exactly sure which idea was best, you know, of those two ideas. But why does she just not either side with Chau or give her opinion? Why is she...
Which is so unlike Peggy. She would not be afraid to give her an opinion. That's why I found this quite astounding tonight, that she really was... She didn't want to take a side.
I mean, it's obvious that it was written that, like, I don't want to take a side. These are the two men I respect. But I feel like she should have just sided with Cha.
But it's a conflict of interest. You know, she doesn't want to be... She knows that Don knows that she was, like, in there.
Right.
You know, she touched his arm, whatever.
Right.
She doesn't want to be siding with the guy that she's into.
Right.
Because if that ever comes out, then she'll just be that girl.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a situation that she really wants to be in, that anyone wants to be in.
She does want to get in bed with Don, so to speak, because she's really not feeling Don these days. She doesn't want to get in bed with Cha, because frankly, if she does, it'll make her look like that she likes
them
all along.
She doesn't want to get in bed with Cha because she wants to get in bed with Cha.
Exactly.
Boom.
Exactly.
And you're always going to be a bit more vulnerable with a man that you have feelings for, so she's much more vulnerable to his head at the moment.
Yeah.
So what's going on with Cha? Because Cha had that moment where he had that complete meltdown where he's like, you know, you touched my hand and then you looked at me and you totally screwed me up. And she's like, I'm not talking about. I love you.
He's really kind of screwing around with her. I'm starting to really dislike him now.
I know.
The last couple of episodes, I felt like he was kind of the good version of Don Draper. I felt like that he was sort of the ad man that has some morals, that has some, is more concerned about the product and, you know, then his own ego, that actually tries to treat people well, was showing some feelings towards Peggy. But now I just think he's sort of the same jerk they all are.
He was kind of a turd at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Here's the thing
Yes.
To my take, here's the thing about Mad Men, which is when we first meet Ted Chau, he is kind of a villain, right? He's like the anti-Don Draper.
Sure.
Like he's Don's rival. He's this villain. And then we see him again. He's poaching Peggy.
Yeah.
And then we see him again. It's kind of like, oh, well, he's not so bad. He's actually a pretty smart, capable guy. And then they merge. And it's like, oh, well, he's actually cool. He's like the cool version of Don Draper.
Draper's
the asshole. This guy, you
know. That's what I mean. Showing up Don as the asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
And then now we see him again. He's kind of like, oh, well, maybe he's not so much. I just submit that this is very consistent with human beings. I mean, it's not...
Yeah.
Everything is not in a box or perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not... This is what we love about Batman. Everything is nuanced. Everything is not perfect. So Ted Chau can, just like Don Draper... Don Draper is the ultimate enigma because we root for Draper. Draper, Don did it again, but he's an asshole, you know? And Cha, you know, we first thought he was a bad guy, then he's a good guy, then he's a bad guy, then he's a good guy. He's just a guy, ad guy.
Here's what I would like to say. Cha, first of all, he lays it out for Peggy in that first scene in the office. He's like, you have somebody, I have somebody.
And so he brings this love into it.
This can't be. I know.
Yeah.
Which begs the question... Is that really what he means?
Yeah.
Or is he, you know, using words that have a lot more weight than he really realizes? I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
And also there's the whole, like, you know, loving someone versus being in love.
Right.
Yeah. So when she comes to him at the end of the episode, after this whole ordeal with Abe, which we'll get into, you know, and she says, I've had a horrible night, you know, Abe and I are no longer together. He got stabbed.
Yeah.
And she just wants anything.
Just a little bit of sympathy.
Anything. Right. And he gives her nothing.
I thought that was awful.
We were ready to work?
Come on.
We were appalled.
Appalled. I was appalled.
Because, like, even if he was like, you know, like, I'm so sorry, but nothing is going to change between us. I already told you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to cheat on my wife.
Right.
That, yeah. I would be like, okay, reasonable. No, don't just completely step over
her. But that would be, yeah. That,
oh,
would be
someone.
That would be a fully realized, lovely person of a character only to be written by one of us. That's not a real person.
Like,
well,
that's like
not,
to think there's real people.
He could be, but he's not. I actually had no problem as a viewer watching it and rooting for Peggy. I was like, oh, come on, Chuck, give her something. But you know, in hindsight, you know, even shortly after, I was like, well, you know what? He laid it out for her. Like, they do work together. This, he does have an office to run. He's not going to be banging his protege.
Fine.
Therefore, yeah. Like, he's got to get to work.
He doesn't have to.
Hey, Draper, nice job on that one, Draper.
Yeah, he doesn't have so to. Cold.
He doesn't have to bang his protege. No. But if it's someone that he says that he loves, he can show just a teensy bit more tenderness.
That's what I
and
thought.
Just say, and say, you know, will you round up the team with just a slightly bit more understanding? Like, I'm sorry that this happened to you, but. We got to get to work.
Yeah.
Versus,
that's right.
Ready for work?
That was awful.
I'm Ted Shaw, and I love what I do.
Well, that was awful.
I go home at night. I drink, and I don't drink alcohol. I just kiss my wife goodnight and talk to my children.
That was a bit sort of scary and robotic, and almost a bit like, you know, it was a little.
It was awful.
Abrupt.
Yeah, it was you're right. Just nothing there. However, that's why, you know, at the end where Peggy's just kind of looking from Don, it's like, what? She's not going to get. Anything from anyone.
Well,
she's just, like, stuck in the middle.
Yeah, I get that. I didn't mind it as much, but, you know, thinking about it, I'm like, okay, well, I don't know how that was supposed to end, but yes, you know, and it'll be interesting to see if Chaw comes back, if he wants more, or if Peggy comes back, it'll be, we'll see.
Peggy should not want more from this guy. She'd have to be really stupid if she...
If he wants more, she better make him work for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Well, this opens the door for, I mean, you know, women of the world, I mean, most women I talk to, at least, and most people, things I've read, people really want Peggy and Stan. So this may open the door.
Because they have great chemistry, but then he ruined that by banging Wendy.
No, I don't know that he ruined that by banging Wendy. I think that
he definitely lowered himself in her esteem.
Certainly, but I think that, you know, after we did our show and watched the episode again, I read a bunch of stuff. You know,
he made her feel cheap.
I think that another take on that. I'm not saying this is my take, but another view of that is that, like, you know, in that moment, Peggy really felt something and really felt something for Stan and really felt like this was the right thing to do, although she really, really wanted to do something. And then when she saw, you know, that, you know, Stan doing that to the teenager.
Wendy.
Then that she felt partially disgusted, but also partially like, I guess I missed my window, you know.
That was what was written.
Really?
No.
Okay.
I would say disgusted, partially disgusted, partially, I can't believe I even considered that for a second.
Okay, we'll see.
Peggy and Pete? Do you think that would ever have a shot?
No.
Pete needs someone else.
I know, but they don't even talk in the office. When was the last time they had a scene alone together? Season 4?
It's like there's... Yeah.
Well, I will see how that plays. I think that may reopen the door for Peggy and Stan. Mm. But let's talk about Peggy and Abe.
Yes.
You know, because they've got a lot. You know, the neighborhood is not. I mean, look. Abe is, you know, Abe is a die in the wool, die hard. You know, liberal, left wing. Yeah. You know, 1960s. You know, activist guy. He's gonna live in the worst neighborhoods. He's gonna talk
not gonna to rat out on anyone.
He's also gonna get mugged, you know, and then talk to the police officers like, was he colored or Puerto Rican? Maybe he was white.
Right. Yeah.
And the police was like rolling his eyes, like, all right, buddy. Yeah. Like that in 1968, that was like a really you know, now we're, you know, everyone's liberal and every, you know, to a certain degree, and everyone's afraid to sort of say these things in a racial manner. But back then it was like, well, yeah, what was it? A black or a Puerto Rican? And he was like, or a white guy, you know, so that just speaks to how far he is, you know, in terms of his being such an open-minded, liberal type cat. And I don't know, I'm not saying Peggy's not, but Peggy's not feeling any of that.
No.
Peggy's like calling them animals. She's calling them, you know, I mean, she said, like, she's done with the neighborhood. She's not trying to, you know, I'm not saying Peggy's a bad person, but she's not down for the cause. She just wants to be comfortable, you know.
Well, and safe.
And safe.
And like, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. This isn't about
people throwing rocks through your window and stuff. I mean, it's not exactly the most pleasant way to be living.
Abe calls her at the end of the episode. He's like, you'll always be the enemy.
Yeah.
You'll always be the enemy, and what I hate what you do with every fiber of my being.
Sure.
You know?
So...
And he gets stabbed so many times in this episode. And I mean, he only gets stabbed twice, but that's so many times for one episode.
Yeah.
The everyone was kind of bad, though.
But what's this article he's writing, too? He keeps referring to this article.
I feel the article's going to come out.
Yeah.
Gonna blow the
mind.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, ending.
The article comes out next episode.
Yeah.
And she goes ballistic.
Yeah, the article will surface about, you know. It's living sleeping with the enemy, or living in the city, or it'll be something like that.
It'll be like an atmosphere piece, you know, like everyone's scared in this neighborhood, but I'm not scared. But my girlfriend was, so she stabbed me, which I was like, I totally thought that was a dream sequence.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought there were a couple things in this episode that were going to be a dream sequence, then wound up not being one. Because like in the little description, it was like Joan goes to the beach, Roger has a problem, and I think there was like it was like Pete has a recurring dream or something.
Yeah. Right.
But there was no
dream.
Pete, no dreams.
No, Roger has a recurring dream. I think that's in the description.
Well, he doesn't have a dream either.
I didn't get that one.
Well, it's interesting. I really think this is a larger conversation to be had about sort of I really appreciate the way that they're handling I don't know. There's a lot. Lots been said. We don't have time to get into this whole thing. Lots been said about race and the way they're handling race. And there's been a lot of talk, positive, mostly negatively, about the way they handled Grandma
Ida
last
really?
Episode. Oh yeah. There's been a lot of like, well, you know, the for a show that is not known for its you know, African American characters, to use such a broadly drawn African American character that comes in and you know is very stereotypical, and then she turns out to be someone a burglar, and she offers to cook them fried chicken and blah 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 blah. These are, you know, these aren't necessarily my takes, but there's been obviously been some talk about that, and the thing is that, you know, again, this is really not a show that's going to examine race in those ways, but I think that what it is doing in a really interesting way, including this tonight's episode, is telling the story from the point of view from those people at that time in 1968. So what I mean by that is, you know, a guy like Abe represents this hyper liberal, like activist type guy who's really on the edge. And Peggy, no one thinks Peggy's a racist or a bad person or anything else, but she's a person who is living in a bad neighborhood in the middle of in New York in 1968, where shit's going down, and how that affects her is how that affects her. So she does say they're animals. Now I'm not saying Peggy's a racist for saying they're animals, but that sort of affects how people were thinking at the time. And I think that, like, I do appreciate a look at, because this show is from the perspective of these people living in this time, I do appreciate an honest look of where they were coming from. I don't want some super ultra, you know, politically correct 2013 version of retelling of how we may have how we thought things would have been because we love these people. I want to know how they really thought in that moment. I think that they're doing really, really good job of that. So that's just my thought on that. Sure. But anyway, so moving on to...
Just real quick before we move on, just a brilliant little comedic moment when they're in the ambulance and that nurse, she's like, he's going to be okay, right? It's just a little shrug.
Like,
I don't know.
You've seen, he's probably seen a million stabbings that week, and it's like, who
just
cares?
Just like such great subtle acting, whoever that guy is.
He was great.
Kudos, my friend.
Exactly.
Ambulance guy. So, like, Pete and Roger, a little bit, let's just quickly touch on both. So, Pete, you know, we see the return of Duck because Pete is starting to get nervous about his position, you know, and Crane makes that very, like, Crane makes an analogy like, look, dude, we're the 27 Yankees right now. Mm-hmm. I know you think that things are all effed up, but, like, we've got the all-star team here. Everyone's thinking that, you know, everyone wants us because we're the all-star team. Right. Now's the time to have your resume out there. For me, when the dust settles, I'll be a partner, but, like, you might want to think about putting your resume out there. So Pete goes out there and he sees his boy Duck, and Duck tells him, I used to be you. Like, I get it, but you need to get your shit together. Get your family in order.
Yeah.
Don't be desperate.
And I'm not sure that the room stinks of desperation. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure when he told Pete that it's all about family. Pete says, my family is a distraction. you know, and it was just Pete's view. But do you think that hit? So when Duck gave him that bit of advice, did that hit home for Pete?
No.
No? Think Pete just missed him?
Okay. No. No.
Is that a no, Matt?
I believe that was a no. No.
Catherine, do you think that hit home for him at all?
About the family.
Yeah.
Do you mean what the advice that Duck
the advice? Duck's like, look, man.
No, because he doesn't feel anything much for his.
It's a distraction.
Especially for his parents and his family.
Yeah. He absolutely. Like the look on his face when he said, my family is a distraction. He believes it. He doesn't know what to do with himself. And while he may take in the advice that if he wants to go anywhere else, you know, he needs to get his professional life in order.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Duck is speaking as a guy who's been divorced for a while, who's seen the relationship with his kids completely erode. He's giving the man solid advice that he wished that he'd had when he was his age. The difference is Pete doesn't care about any of that now.
And I don't think he thinks it affects his work. I mean, he thinks the work.
But
separate.
It clearly is. We think Duck is right. I mean, in this room, we think Duck
is
right.
He's very right.
But Pete thinks it's all about the work. I don't think he thinks family is important at all.
Pete. That's why he's going bald, man.
Man, that hairline. We need a hairline watch for Pete. Yeah.
Pete is losing ground. And I mean, you know, from that, you know, not having a seat on the. There was no seat for him there when they merged.
No seat. He's certainly not in the long acronym of Sterling Cooper Draper Price CGC. He's not anywhere. There's no Campbell.
Yeah. So that's what he was also saying, that really even in the work situation that people know that he hasn't got much power there, right? That he's not really getting the accounts, he's not really doing what he needs to be doing. So he hasn't really got a valuable resume to give to anyone at this point.
Hmm. Well, we'll see what happens with Pete. I really like to believe that this is sort of that in the end, I'd be very delighted if in the end Mad Men turns out to be a sort of redemption story for Pete. I think Don is not going to be redeamed. I know we're all rooting for Don. I think Don's going straight.
Pretty irredeemable.
I mean, he might end up dead by the end of the series. I think I feel like the series will end up with Don dead. But Pete, though, Pete's arc of starting where he started,
Can I say one thing? I know that everyone on the planet would be furious and would be up in arms and super upset, but I think it would be really, really awesome if Don died before season 7 or before the end of the series. Yeah. No, because when a star leaves a series, a vacuum is left. And other characters get more screen time, and we could develop more of their stories. I'm not saying. I know that that's not a popular.
You really hate Don. I thought I hated Don.
Wow.
No, I'm not saying. Look, he's still an incredibly fascinating person. Right. I loved what was revealed tonight, but I'm just saying, I care about other characters more, and I would love to make sure that everyone else gets nice wrapped up stories.
Okay. Fair enough.
And it would be a ballsy move.
Well, let's just briefly touch on Roger. I think Roger had some interesting notes tonight. He had one note. That was nice.
That was beautiful.
Roger had one note. You know, we saw the whole thing with his grandson. He took his 4-year-old grandson to Planet of the Apes. We saw his interaction with his daughter, who did not like that at all, and actually sort of told him, "You're not allowed to see your grandson anymore unless your mother's around." Mm. And it was more about his relationship with his daughter. So he was actually like, it's almost like you and I had a shitty relationship, Dad. I'll give you one last chance to the grandson. No, you can't even do that right. So
I
you're
don't think
done.
He was that bad taking him to Planet of the Apes.
Well, but this is
your, it was an overreaction.
It was an over. But this
his
is
daughter
what,
was a little
Well, no, but this is what I told you in the room. It wasn't about what he did with his grandson. It's about a lifetime of what he's done with his daughter.
Sure.
So she's gonna jump on him, whatever.
Yeah,
whatever.
Well, it was like, Dad, you've been a shitty dad.
Yeah.
That's what it is. But you know what? I'll give you this one opportunity with your grandson. He is your grandson, and then he effed it up by going to take him to Planet of the Apes, and then he's being Roger Sterling about it. He's like, you know, oh, well, you know, what? What's the big deal?
Yeah, Don took his kid.
Right. So exactly. So that's not. And I think that was really telling at the very end when he, you know, so Sterling reacted to that by being like, well, I don't have a grandson anymore, but I do have a son. And I think that what was said there, what was not said, but obviously seen was, I effed this up with my daughter. Mm. I'm effing this up with my grandson. like, I'm not going to F this up with my son. I want to bring him something. Let me bring him something. And he goes to Joan, and he's like, he's my son too. Like, he's saying, I want to bring him something. What does she tell him? She says, I know you want to do the right things.
Yeah.
Do you think Do you think Joan is right by blocking him from his son? I sort of feel like it is his son. It is his son. If he wants to take some part in his life, he has every right to.
Not necessarily.
No. But what Joan is saying, though, is has nothing to do with the global idea of, does a father belong with her son? What she's saying is, Roger, I know who you are. You're Roger Sterling. You're not capable of being a dad because you're too busy being Roger Sterling. So knock it off.
Yeah, right. Because it's going to be daughter way said. Too confusing for my kid.
Yeah, like if you really stopped being Roger Sterling and wanted to come and be the son's father, then that's great.
But what about when that kid grows up and finds out who his real dad?
But that's a whole separate thing. Like that. I mean, you're talking about the global view of, like, should the father be with his son? And yes, of course. But what I'm saying is, from Joan's point of view, it's what Joan is saying is, look, dude, like, you're too busy being Roger Sterling. You're kind of, I can't have it. And as soon as if you want to change you, then you're welcome to be in your son's life. But you're not going to change you. And so why bother? And you know you don't want to change. So why bother? And that's exactly what his daughter said. It's like, Dad, you're just, you're dad. Like, you're not, and then you do the same thing with your grandson. Like, enough. Like, I don't want to see you anymore. So Roger is getting a bit of, like, so a reality check in terms of, like, his whole, I'm Roger Sterling, it's not really working out with his family.
I don't know. Is he going to be any worse dad than other dads? I mean, I don't know. Well, I just sort of think, you know, these women are dismissing him, but, I mean, he is trying.
Well, I mean, I'm not, you know.
I'm sure he's not going to be the perfect dad.
I'm not saying Roger Sterling does not have any right to see his children. I'm just saying, like, this is my opinion from what I thought Joan's point of view was, But now, speaking of Joan, go ahead.
I just want to, real quick, because Megan kind of got the short shrift in this podcast.
Of course.
We need a bit more Megan.
Oh, God.
She's having trouble on her soap opera.
Yes.
She's playing two characters, two halves of one whole, as it were.
Exactly.
Which is the better half? We don't know.
She's playing a mistress, which is kind of interesting. Not only
is she playing a mistress, but like that one scene we saw at the beginning was very telling. It's like she's having this sort of the argument about infidelity with this brunette who looks a lot like
like Megan.
Not a lot like Megan, but a lot like
Sylvia.
Sylvia. Yeah.
Interesting.
And so she has this sort of face off with this, you know, about that. She's in her full French accent, playing an alter ego. I thought that was very, very meta. Very meta of Mad Men to do that, play that scene out. But go ahead, Matt, continue.
Oh, she had that scene with her old friend Arlene.
Yes.
Arlene the swinger.
Arlene.
Almost some girl on girl action.
Arlene is very DTF.
Yes.
She is DTF in the highest order.
She made her move, and Megan. It was like such an awkward, weird little scene where Megan was like, oh no, I'm not interested. She's like, you're a tease. And she's like, fine. And then she goes in for another kiss. She's like, no, I'm fine being a tease.
Yeah, that was so Abbott and Costello. It's like a comedy bit
almost
there.
Funny,
yeah.
Yes.
Very funny. It was very funny.
It'll be interesting to see if that affects her at work.
And then, of course, Don comes back and he sort of seems like he's going to try. So she thinks that she may have him back.
And they finally have a connection moment for the first time all season.
Oh, can I ask you, just back to that, just about the lesbian kiss try scene. I thought that was very, very funny the way it played out. She tried to kiss her three or four times. It didn't work out.
Three times.
When she left, Megan got a kick out of it. She kind of chuckled to herself. She got a kick out of the whole thing, which I thought was kind of neat. But so when Don returned and Megan was just, out, in her just looking hot out in the patio being Megan, when Don returned, I actually felt that he was being sincere. I actually felt that what Betty told him in that moment, and seeing Betty and Henry together, like being happy, presumably happy, like sort of got to him.
Yeah.
So I think he went back and he was genuinely trying to try. Or did you think he was just being, soulless
Don Draper? I think the whole experience with Betty and he was even saying to Betty, like, what would this have been like if we stayed together? I think there was a slightly bit of that when he came back to Megan. It's like, maybe I should try.
Right.
Maybe I should try, Betty, I lost or whatever, but, maybe now.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
He remembers what he lost and the fact that it was his fault. Mm. He doesn't want to lose another wife.
Yeah, it felt that way. I mean,
how long that'll last.
Yeah, well, I mean, do we think that Don loves Megan and that they're going to make it? I mean, like.
No.
I
don't think they're going to make it.
No to the love, okay. Maybe to the make it.
All right.
Yeah.
That's just Catherine, what do you think?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
I think it was the idea of Megan and vice versa, the idea of Don. I think that's what they both fell for.
Yeah.
And it wasn't real. And I don't think it still isn't real.
I think Megan's lovely, but I don't know. Either way. Okay, right. So let's get to Benson Watch here.
Yes!
This is the.
And I had a Benson experience.
Yes.
Yeah, Catherine, real quick, tell us about the Benson experience.
I know. I was at the Fox party on. There's like it was being like the LA screenings up front, which is premiering all the new shows here. And so there was a big Fox party at the Fox lot, and who should I spot? Benson.
Bob Benson.
James Wong.
So excited. I went straight up to him and went, oh, and it must have been a lot of people coming up to him going, oh my God, I love you on Mad Men. You know, he has been on a lot of other shows like Political Animals and that.
Yeah.
And he's coming up in the new Robin Williams comedy.
Sure.
The crazy one.
Which is set in an advertising agency as well.
Yeah, he's been a bit of a, Benson has been one to watch for a while. Fox particularly has put a lot of sort of a stock in Benson himself. They put him in Lone Star, which was actually great, but it got canceled two episodes. And he's been a really good actor who people recognize as a good actor who just hasn't found the right thing because they keep getting canceled. Mm. And maybe it made me think that like maybe Benson's going to be a bigger thing when I saw
him. That's the thing. Yeah. Like when I saw that it was James Wolk on the show, because he's a rising star, I'm like, this guy is one to watch.
Right.
Yeah. Hence, Benson Watch.
And I told him about our Benson Watch, and he loved it.
Good,
good.
And I also told him about our fantastic finale that we're having at the John Lovitz Comedy Club.
Yes, yes.
And if he's true to his word, he said he'd love to be there.
Good. So, well, we'll see Benson there too.
So hopefully, and he did, and he would not reveal. He did say, you know, watch out for tonight. And of course, we did see more about Benson tonight. But he was being very coy about how hit the finale. I said, "Are you in the finale?" And he went, "I can't tell you." Yeah, so that makes me think he probably is. But
he dies.
Yeah,
we all know.
Yeah. Okay,
it's clear.
Can we get into Benson Watch
proper? Go ahead.
So we get to Joan's apartment, and who is there in his little short shorts
but
Benson himself.
Yeah.
Amazing shorts.
The man is now, I would say he's Joan's friend and traveling companion. We did not necessarily see that it was romantic, but she is allowing him into her life and into her son's life.
Okay, yeah. Have they done it? No.
I don't think
so. And he's a younger man, right?
Yeah, it doesn't read that way. And I think that someone with Joan's history, if it's going to be something serious, she's not going to let that happen until she trusts the person.
Okay. But can we trust Benson?
And that's the thing. The more decent he appears, the less I trust him.
Yes, I think so.
He is a social climber of the highest order. We don't know where he comes from. And he is just so, so nice on a show of nothing but flawed people.
Yes.
He sticks out like a sore thumb. And I guarantee when he strikes, it will be vicious.
Okay, there it is.
Yes.
You're very passionate about this.
Damn near vitriolic.
You're right. It's so obvious. He's this mysterious character that's come in. And he's ingratiating himself to everyone and even Pete tonight. He's trying to help out.
Well, he
it's
did so
too much.
And we
too
should
much.
Mention that
a
he
miracle
did
miracle level. Like it's he was like a miracle worker, like bringing this nurse in to help Pete in his darkest hour.
Maybe he's a little angel.
I'm with you. I do believe he's a social climber. I don't think he's malicious. I don't think he's doing anything bad. I think that he did use information he obtained from Joan to use it with Pete in order to help himself because he's trying to ingratiate himself to Pete, which is. Speaks to your point. Now, but what I thought he was going to do in that moment, I was afraid. I thought he was going to say something like, I feel like Roger and Joan.
I
thought he was going to really go for it, but he didn't. He did another thing. And so that was, we'll see. I mean, you know, the door is definitely open for Benson to be something other than he pretends to be.
We're obviously going to find out something.
He's definitely a social climber. We'll
see.
And
there's some crazy theories out there on who he really is.
An alien.
Everything to Don Draper's lost son, I read somewhere too. So kind of some really interesting theories out there about Benson.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
All right. So,
curiouser and curiouser. Yeah.
Let's just jump into the Mike August catches of the week. We have superfan Mike August who every week, pours over these episodes with a fine-tooth comb and a magnifying glass and finds out and really sort of interprets some of these catches that we may have missed because we just watched the episode, you know,
immediately
50
before.
Minutes ago.
Yeah.
And so we're not catching everything clearly, but Mike August has. So what do you have for him?
Okay. So this is from last week's episode, The Crash. With what he has been mentioning with the war references between the merging agencies, the injection scene with the doctor was interesting to him, as amphetamines were given to soldiers during World War II to fight fatigue and improve their mood and stamina. And marijuana and heroin use was rampant by soldiers fighting through the madness of Vietnam. So kind of a drug and war connection. There was a checkerboard on the table during the Chevy meeting, which I felt was symbolic of the men in the office trying to outmaneuver and jump over each other. And Frank Gleason was referred to as a piece that cannot be replaced. Edgar Allan Poe's poem, Annabel Lee, was referenced with the line, "I was a child and she was a child in the kingdom by the sea." The poem is about a memory involving a long-lost love. Perhaps the kingdom was symbolic of the whorehouse with Don the child, and he felt love for Aimée, but he had to keep those feelings repressed, and that hung with him regarding his relationships with women through his adult life. After this episode, I now feel more sympathetic towards Don.
Hello. I said that last week, and you guys jumped on me.
I did, yeah. We all
did. Yeah, thank you, Mike, for agreeing with me.
Apologies, Catherine.
I still think it's not about Don, but I mean, it's not about her. Yeah. It's about Don, not her, but go ahead.
Yeah. Then Wendy read Don's mind with the question, "Does someone love me?" Again, perhaps Don still wonders if Aimée felt any love for him as well. And Mike August views Grandma Ida as a symbol of Bob Benson disguising himself as a friend. Grandma in Don's home contrasted with Benson in Don's office. Don better not leave the door open in the latter. Ooh. I agree.
I'm sure you do, sir. I'm sure you do. Well, thank you very much, superfan Mike August. We're looking forward to your catches on this week as well, because I'm sure that there's a lot that we've missed here. So let's get close to wrapping this up. But before we go to predictions, can we go to some news and gossip? We do have
TV news.
Yeah, so all we have for news and gossip this week is the fact that we are, as we announced last week in an early announcement, was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
It was last week.
Last week, that we are doing a live finale.
Wow.
Yes, a live Mad Men finale. Ooh. We are going to be with the cast of Mad Men, and as Phil said, the big man will be there. The cast of Mad Men will be with us at in City Walk on June 23rd at the John Lovitz Comedy Club here in Los Angeles. You can buy tickets now. You can buy tickets from us at AfterBuzz TV or at the John Lovitz Comedy Club, I believe, online. But it's going to be the cast. It's going to be us moderating and asking questions. Maria Menounos will be there. She will be hosting and emceeing. And we're going to watch the show together with us, all of us here, including Joe Sanfilippo and you. And then we will talk to the cast and ask them a bunch of questions, some questions from you, some questions from us, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So looking forward to that. We hope if you guys are in town, come. If you're not in town, fly out.
Yeah.
If you're drive out, and it should be a stone groove, my man.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity,
That's
people.
Right.
There will never again be a Mad Men Season 6 live AfterBuzz finale.
There will never
There's only
never
one.
Again.
In the history of history, there'll be one live Mad Men Season 6 finale. So that's happening. But after that, let's jump into predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
What do you have, Matt Lieberman?
I predict that Bob Benson, that snake, will further worm his way into the hearts and minds of people at Sterling, Cooper, Draper, Price, Cutler, Gleason, and Shaw.
Okay.
And I think we're going to get a backstory episode sooner rather than later, because it's at this point he's still a question mark. You know, when we had Ginsburg join the office, we had him have his own story a few episodes in last season. So I think we're going to get something on him. I think that Don and Megan are going to work on their relationship. What shape that will take, I'm not sure. But I think that he's redoubling his efforts to regain control at home and abroad being the office.
Right.
And that
he controls a lot of broads.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Oh, sorry.
And and that Peggy and Shaw are going to continue this tete-a-tete. He's going to have to work hard to get her back.
All right.
Okay, I'm getting a different prediction on Peggy. I think she's been let down by Shaw. I think we're going to see her more back on the Don camp. Actually, that's what I think.
Good call.
I actually agree. I think that was my prediction as well. I think we'll see that Peggy will be openly backing Don. I think Don will sort of rise again as this creative.
Yes.
You know, the creative phoenix will rise from the
ashes. Exactly.
I talked about, like, maybe after this literal crash of last week, that maybe hopefully Don will start to rebuild himself. And even though he went immediately and cheated again with his ex-wife, and somehow...
That almost doesn't count as cheating.
Oh, you can't say that.
Like, you know, I'm like, Don's back. And I, how many times do I have to say, Don's back? And but he seemed to, you know, from that experience, want to work things out with Megan. So we'll see. And I think that that'll carry over to his creativity, and we'll see. I think that, and I think Peggy will side with him as well.
Yep.
So that's what they. That's all we got for this week. Matt Lieberman, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. You can also find me here on AfterBuzz TV on the Defiance After Show.
Yes.
Mondays at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic new show on sci-fi, and I highly recommend it.
It's Grant Bowler.
Yes, Grant Bowler, who's fantastic.
Kiwi Aussie.
Kiwi Aussie.
Yes.
And you can find my sketch comedy on VOYTV.com.
Hilarious.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, and I've got my photo up with me and Benson, at Catherine Tulich, KatherineTulich. And also this week I have a story in the LA Times on Friday, so you can check me out there as well.
Yes, LA Times. And then Catherine, I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. I'm also doing the Mad Men show, which I'm doing right now, but I'm also doing the Hannibal AfterBuzz show here with Joe
number
Sanfilippo,
one on
which
AfterBuzz
is number one AfterBuzz, been for a couple of weeks, and I'm also on Grantland, ESPN's Grantland.com. I have a bunch of stuff coming out for the month of June, so check me out there, and as well as on Extra with Maria Menounos, and we'll all see you on the 23rd of June for our Mad Men live finale.
Yay! Yes.
So that's that. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.